Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
My great honor to launch a new series today. We are so fortunate to be associated with all of our CLC award honorees, and I'm going to be interviewing two today, and I'd like to introduce them to you. So our first honoree is Asia Pope. She is the inaugural director of DEI at Buckeye Ranch, and she'll tell us more about that in a minute. Asia is in Columbus, Ohio, where the mission at Buckeye Ranch is the behavioral, emotional, and mental well-being of children, youth, and families throughout Central Ohio and beyond. She has consistently demonstrated a steadfast commitment to alleviating the suffering of others and fostering inclusive environments. She makes staff feel safe when sharing challenging experiences and effectively communicates concerns to leadership. And that came from her many folks that put her forward as an honoree. So we're very happy to have you here, Asia. Welcome. And our other guest in this beautiful conversation today is Comfort Dondo, who's the founder of Fumulani. I hope I said that right, Comfort. You'll correct me. African Women Against Violence. And she is based in St. Paul, Minnesota, where 22% of immigrants are African descent. Her nomination came from her home country of Zimbabwe, and her organization is dedicated to preventing domestic violence and sexual abuse in communities of color by providing culturally specific resources to women and girls. Comfort's compassionate leadership uses her own experience as a survivor to drive her beautiful global vision, and she embodies empathy, kindness, and a genuine concern for others. Both of these beautiful women are in the business of healing, and I'm so honored to have you here today to have this conversation. Welcome. Yeah, so great to be with you. And thank you for the work that you do every day. I'm already crying, so we know it's going to be a good podcast. So I'd like to hear from each of you a little bit about your personal story and what brought you to this work, a little bit about your background. We're going to go to the past before we go to the present. So, Comfort, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. So, yes, as it's been said, my name is Comfort Dondo. I'm first-generation immigrant, immigrated from Zimbabwe at age 18 for college. And my story on how I began this work starts after being a first-time mom and finding that I was in an abusive relationship. I realized that there was no culturally specific shelters, domestic violence shelters for women like myself. And it took me on a path to create a solution for women in my community. I learned that in Minnesota, although 22% of immigrants represented here were of African heritage, there was not services. So that's a little bit about my story. I started Pumulani back in 2018 out of a lived experience to mitigate the gap that was there in my community.
Beautiful. Thank you. And Asia, tell us a little bit about yourself and your story.
Wow, there's a lot to it. So I really started in this work because of my daughter, Anaya, who passed away in 2019, the day before I graduated with my master's degree, and still spoke at graduation that next day. She had very complex special needs. So just operating through society with her and how cruel people can be and not understanding or supportive of the special needs community or those special needs parents. They too are superheroes. They deal with a lot day in and day out. And after losing her, I had a couple of years where I grieved in inappropriate ways, a lot of heavy drinking, random trips that I have never done before. And in doing so, I was sexually assaulted, robbed, and put into a psych ward on a trip to New York a couple years ago. So being on the call with Comfort and understanding that that's what her organization does, it Now I know why you said it's not an accident that we were together. So for me, it's being that person at the table to really help and, you know, guide leaders to see some of our team members' struggles. I think too often some of our frontline staff members feel like if you're an executive, you have it all together, when realistically, I've been through the same exact struggles as you have, if not worse, and I am still here standing and smiling, so you can do it too.
No, I so appreciate both of you sharing your hearts and your struggles. And I do love that we have a forum here where we can all just let things hang out a little bit. And, you know, I'm not a survivor of sexual abuse. I appreciate that, but I am a survivor of alcoholism, and I'm going to have 33 years of not managing my, you know, I 33 years sober. And before then I didn't really have tools to manage stress. So I had a lot of fun, but I didn't have the tools to manage stress. And I really didn't have the tools to be a leader. You know, it's very hard to be a leader when you're not centered. So I so appreciate that both of you have been through so much, and here you are leading organizations that do so much. So my first question to each of you is, how do you keep centered now? Like, what's going on now with your leadership and your self-care?
I could go first. Right now I love water. Water is my calming place. So here in Columbus, we have the Hoover Dam. So I like to go out there after a long week or even a really rough day and just sit out there and kind of center my thoughts, kind of just relax my mind a little bit. I feel like in the society we're in today, we're always connected to something or someone. So it's the phone, it's the TV, it's your iPad, whatever it is. And we don't take enough time to kind of just sit and be with ourselves anymore. So I've kind of made that one of my priorities, is to make sure I take time to actually sit with myself, process my feelings, process anything that I need to for work or anything that's like sitting heavy on my shoulders. And then I am able to come back to the table or come back to work refreshed, smiling, and ready to start all over.
Lovely. Comfort, how about you?
I love that question. Thank you. You know, so for me, I've realized that a lot of the disease, a lot of the disconnectedness, a lot of the addictions, a lot of them, even the mental health crisis that we have even in this country, has had a lot to do with our disconnect, as my sister just put it, the disconnection from self. And the over connection to everything else. And so how I've been centering myself in order to thrive in this leadership role has been really going back to my African thought processes, my African ways of being. So it includes not just like a one-time meditation in the morning or a chunk of time where I meditate, but it is to live a life that is full of rituals. My day is full of rituals. From the time I wake up in the morning, I perform rituals of how I make my tea, how I take intentional walks to the lake, how I go and dip my feet in the lake, and even in how I work. If you looked at my desk right now, there's a lot of symbols and pieces of my Africanness that I use for ritual. I play our traditional Mbira music. In fact, actually, I am wearing, I'm tying on a traditional cloth from my country that is worn by traditional healers. So everything about the way I be has been going back. And why this is important as part of grounding has been, I come from a colony of Britain, and colonization taught us that all that we are was demonic. And so when you are taught that everything that you are, there's something wrong with your hair texture, there's something wrong with your ways of worshiping, you start to self-hate. And subconsciously, you don't realize you're doing that. And so I've been on a beautiful path of healing, and the ways in which I center and teach my kids to center, even my staff to center, is just to going back to connect with self, even if that means waking up and finding a lake or a dam, as Sister Asia does. So those are some of the ways in which I center myself.
I love that. I love going back to rituals that work from childhood or history and reclaiming them too, because I think sometimes we forget things that worked in childhood or worked from our history or worked from our home country. Yeah, that's beautiful. And yeah, I do think, like, especially in this day of age of Zoom, like what we're wearing, what's in our office. Asia has beautiful toys and pictures from her daughter, like all these things is so important, because even though we're in a virtual world, we need to hold on to things as well, you know. So great. So thank you for that. Starting with Asia, I'd love to hear what Buckeye Ranch is up to now, like what your work as the inaugural DEI officer is. How's it going? What are you doing? What's your everyday like? What's going on right now?
Oh, it's fun here in the office every day. It's something new every day. We have multiple programs within the organization. So right now, my big focus is our DEI Institute, which will be coming up, as well as a positive note. A positive note is where we have a lot of our donors within the community and even outside of the community that donate for this event. It's a community-wide event. We have some of our children that we have served, and our families come in and tell their stories and how they've grown and developed with our services. And it's such a beautiful night. I've cried every time that I've gone. It's just simply amazing. So all hands are on deck for that planning. And that kicks off in April. That is when our event is. And our institute, which we just recently moved, will be in this upcoming spring. So we'll be looking for external speakers. Comfort, I definitely would love to connect with you. I think you would fit in with the theme that I'm going for this year, actually. So everything's working out today for me. But that's just a day filled with learning for team members. It's really a day where our CEO, Vicky Sandy Thompson, has dedicated all day for our team members to sit in courses that really matter to them. A lot of times I think organizations are so focused on making sure we get this compliance training out. We got to get it out, got to get it out. But we forget that our team members really aren't getting anything out of training if they're just clicking through, or they're just in training listening to a lecture instead of being interactive. So that's one of the biggest things that we just implemented last year as our first one in my first year with the Buckeye Ranch. And now we're getting ready to launch our second one. So we're super excited about that and super busy, of course.
Well, maybe we'd like to come play with you too. So don't leave us out.
Yes, come.
Curious about how many people you touch a year. Like what is your breadth of access to people around Columbus, Ohio? I'm curious about that.
I think the last time I looked, we've reached this past year upwards of 6,000 families.
Amazing.
So across the ranch as a whole, that includes, we have our residential program, that's where our kiddos stay with us. We have our Permanent Family Solution Network. That is our team that gets the overflow of cases from Franklin County Children's Services. So we work those cases as they do. We have our Bridges and TAY program. So that's for our, I don't want to call them kiddos because they are young adults. They're transitioning.
They don't like to be called kids, right?
right. I'm an adult now. So we help them transition into adulthood. So they have their own apartments that they stay with us in, help with billing, things like that. And we also have our care management entity program, which is growing at amazing rates. We are set to hire a slew of people this year because our services are growing in that department so well. So we just have a lot of, and of course, foster care. So there's a lot of programs and a lot of team members that are out there touching our children and our communities daily.
One more question about what you're up to. I have so many questions, but we only have a little bit of time. Right? So this is just the beginning of our conversation. I think one of the things I heard about you is you do diversity field trips or something.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yes. So this, my first year here, I got feedback from team members that for Juneteenth, we don't do anything. This isn't a recognized holiday, but our senior leadership had already been working on making Juneteenth a recognized holiday for the Buckeye Ranch. But in the meantime, I said, hey, let's do a cultural trip. So I got a big charter bus. We got 53 team members last year to come. We took them to the Underground Railroad Museum in Cincinnati. And I developed a packet for them to go through the museum, find facts, let us know how things resonated with them. So that was something that we did on the way back. And those conversations were really, really life-changing to me, I would say, just hearing from different lived experiences of our team members. Some were saying, I never knew that people from that culture struggled as bad as they did, especially with like having to carry cotton, because you could actually carry cotton in the museum and feel how it feels and understand that people's fingers were blistered and cut day in and day out, and they had to keep going. So being able to say, I get to sit in an office where I don't have to deal with that, it's a blessing, but it also showed that they had compassion for what some of my ancestors went through, but also taking into account, these are the families that you're serving too. So they have, some families have trauma from this. It carries on. Just because slavery is over, it does not mean that it is done. We still have a lot of work to be done.
Well, when I come visit, you'll take me to that museum. It sounds amazing. It's yes. Amazing. And I love that even though you're dealing with hard subjects, you do it in a celebratory way, which is pretty amazing. And it's got to be healing. It just has to be. Hope.
Yeah, that's always really my goal, because I know a lot of these conversations are difficult and people tend to shy away from them. But I'm the type of leader that I don't want us to shy away, because at the end of the day, the problem is still there, whether we talk about it or not. So it's best that we talk about it so we can understand where each of us is coming from or our perspectives to help us work together and move forward.
Wonderful. And I just think it's a great tip for any leader out there that's listening about addressing DEIB in a positive way. You know, I think people shy away from it because it's difficult, but it doesn't have to be all drudgery and deep and heavy. It can be, you know, putting people on a bus and having a conversation. It's a great model, great idea. I'm so impressed with it. So Comfort, tell us what you're up to. What's going on with your organization?
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks, Estasia. Beautiful work. I can't wait to visit. I'll be right there.
We're going to have a reunion in Lyon.
So at Pumulani, you know, we are at, I like to give the analogy of the timeline of a child. So we were founded in 2018. We have really passed our toddlership. And so we've been seeing a lot of pivots organizationally. I think one of the main things I want to highlight is around the way we've been decolonizing our work. Most of the domestic violence programs are still very much immersed in colonialism. Here's what it means. It means that they're doing some great work, but I think there's a need for shifting from seeing survivors as victims to actually seeing survivors as fully the women that they are, that their circumstance is just a moment in their life. And so at our program, we begin to see our women as the entrepreneurs that they are, the nurses that they are. And we're really pivoting from this reactive response to survivors. We are really leaning into their power and looking at them as the full women that they are. So our programming is starting to look different, moving more from crisis response to more long-term sustainability. So it looks like, you know, workforce development, business development, investing. We're talking about investments with the women. We're talking about business building, wealth creation. Those are the programs. And then on the other spectrum, we're also moving away from temporary band-aid solutions, right? That when a woman comes through our program, she gets to go into a group for like those 6 weeks. We're talking about a long-term plan for healing. What are those rituals? And so as part of that, we're doing a lot of healing work with the survivors. One of the projects I'm very, very excited about is my biggest project for this year, because I'm an author. So I use my writing for healing, and including the work we do with the women. I'm going to be co-facilitating and co-creating a workbook with one of our healers here at Pumulani. Her name is Stacey Constante. She's a nutritionist, but she's also an Indigenous healer. We are writing a workbook for children around child sexual abuse prevention. And this workbook is going to be really trauma-informed and also culturally relevant. So we're going to have different illustrators from different communities and cultures so that it's appropriate. I'll give an example. There are some cultures here in Minnesota, even across the globe, who are still practicing female genital mutilation and cutting. We plan to address such topics in the book, how we can prevent. I'm also excited about the work that we've been doing with the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We're really leaning a lot into collaborating, creating working collaborative partnerships with with larger agencies that are doing work like mental health, but they're not really doing it in a culturally responsive way. And so they've been really open. Like one of our partners is NAMI. NAMI is a huge organization. It's mainstream. It's very white. But they've been open to working with us so that they can understand the nuances of what does it mean for a woman who came from a civil war? What does it mean for a woman whose ancestors were brought here 400 years ago, that intergenerational trauma that lies in her DNA, what does that mean? And so that's kind of what we're excited. And then the last thing I'm really excited about with Pumulani is our Senator Amy Klobuchar gave us a little bit over $500,000 with direct appropriation dollars. So we are looking at capital to purchase a building, and we're establishing a healing well, a center where women survivors can have co-working space. We can have therapy on that space. We're literally just trying to create a space where we can gather and remove that disconnect that continues to affect a lot of women, especially women who have lived, who have lived experience in the U.S. So those are a few of the things. I could go on and on, but that's kind of, and then I think before I forget also, we have our first ever fundraiser. The emphasis is not on the fundraiser, but it is to commemorate Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It's going to be on October 1st. We have a breakfast and a luncheon. And the main reason we're doing it is to share our work with the community. For the last 6 years, we haven't really taken time to just breathe and reflect. So it would be a celebration. There'll be a lot of survivors who share their stories on video, in person, and we're inviting some of our elected officials to be present. So these are some of the things that are happening at Pumulani at this moment.
That's amazing, you know, and yeah. I love good news. Senator Klobuchar, thank you for putting the government's money into the right place. So but I like celebrating good things when politicians do the right thing. So that's amazing. In the future, we are going to be working with children as well. We have some things to talk about with probably both of you about our programs related to children. Congratulations on all your progress in such a short amount of time.
Thank you.
Asia, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Honestly, I'm looking forward to just watching the change. I think that's really what helps me. Yeah, to continue to develop and heal myself, honestly, is to see the change over time. I think too often people get frustrated with things and say, okay, well, things just aren't changing, or I've said too much, or I keep saying the same thing and nothing is changing, instead of understanding that sometimes you just have to change your approach is all. It's your approach. Sometimes just the words you're using or how you're approaching a situation just may not be right. So being able to really build out the DEI program for the Buckeye Ranch is going to be huge for me. I see myself being here for the next 5-8 years, possibly, God willing, of course, but just watching it grow. And my biggest goal at the end of this is to have our internal DEI team be nothing but our internal team members. So the goal is when you come in through this program, you'd start as our admin, and that's a kind of like a 2-year development position. So I don't expect you to sit as an admin for 2 years. I want to develop you into a DEI specialist and move you up into the management position, hopefully the director, maybe I'll move into VP one day. But really, I think there's something to be said about having your internal DEI team be your true TBR team members, because they've been here, they know the core values, they know our principles of quality care, which is something that I should have added earlier, that we do have. And that's part of what really helps to heal me in my continued work is our principles of quality care. It's like Comfort was saying, not seeing survivors as victims anymore. That was huge for me coming here to understand that the Buckeye Ranch's principles of quality of care include taking a strength-based approach. And for me, I am a survivor and I have strengths from that because my life didn't end there. I didn't go down any further. I continue to grow. So I truly feel that being in this trauma-informed care model here, the sky's really the limit for me. So I'm really excited to see what continues to develop. I've been able to meet amazing people such as yourself and Comfort along the way. So I intend for relationships to grow and just to truly watch our DEI program at the Buckeye Ranch blossom.
It's great to hear that story in a time, unfortunately, where I think politics is co-opting DEI programs. And my next Forbes piece I think I'm going to write is called, the working title is DEIB is not political, it's essential. To me, like, it's all about love. It's all about understanding differences, understanding history, understanding backgrounds. And especially in this world where we're disconnected, which you brought up at the beginning of our conversation, it's a way to connect and a way to, especially for both of you, you deal with trauma and healing and souls. I mean, you're really doing soul work. You know, I define soul work as the best use of your passions and purpose. And I would say that you're both doing that and you're leading in beautiful ways. And I thank you for that.
Before you continue with our DEIB work being political, I had just made a post about that on LinkedIn recently. And for me, it's really, like you said, it's about connecting. We've forgotten what it is. I think people get too wrapped up in affirmative action planning and even misunderstanding that it doesn't mean that you have to hire a minority. It's just showing you where your opportunities are within the organization. So if you say that, you know, I'm an inclusive organization, well, DEIB shouldn't be an issue then, because it's including everybody. We are diverse. We come to the table with different lived experiences, even if we do come from the same cultural background. We haven't walked a day in each other's shoes, so we have things to add to it. And I think if we can get past the political piece of it and understand that if somebody in your organization is leading your DEIB and you are Caucasian and you feel like you're being excluded, they're not doing their job right. I can tell you that for sure, because DEIB is for everybody. It's not just for minorities.
Well said. Comfort, you want to add to that at all? Any thoughts you have about that? If I quote you, I'll give you credit in my article.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more to add, but I think you beautifully said it. I was, as you were sharing, Sister Asia, I was thinking about this concept of cultural humility. So there's cultural competency. And for me, I've kind of been leaning more away from cultural competency, but actually cultural humility. And for me, what that is I make sure that I am as competent as I can be in one's culture, but I can never be. That's an impossibility. But to have cultural humility then is to be able to say, I may understand some nuances about you, Sister Asia. I may understand some nuances about you, Laurel, but I may not fully understand. I can never walk in your shoes, but I will be humble about it to actually say, I'll come to the table without assumption, so you can show me how your culture. And so I think I just wanted to point that out, that at Pumulani, we do talk a lot about cultural humility, because like Africa is 54 countries and sub-tribal and sub-religions and language. And so to assume that because I am African, I understand the continent is but a fallacy. So humility is the way to go. I think that's my addition to the DEI topic.
It's a beautiful addition. I think we can write a book with both of your insights. So I'll start with an article. We'll go from there. We'll circle back. I love that. I love both of what you both said. And the great thing for me is I get to learn from the people I get to interview. I'm just very humbled by that and appreciate you both. So if everything goes super well in your organizations, what is your long-term vision? When you know, let's just play a game. Like 10 years from now, when you look back, what would you like to see at your organization?
The goal for us is to uplift each other. The goal for us 10 years from now would be a movement of Pumulani from being just a service provider, a direct service provider, but to actually move to more of a consultancy. And what does that look like? There's a lot of work that needs to be done. And right now we are the only culturally specific program offering services to African-born African diaspora. Our hope is that we can train and build capacity for more African women who are desiring to do this work. In fact, we are actually starting to support a few organizations that are starting to do this work so that they can go into their cultural spaces and do this work effectively. That is one. I want to mention, not to make this political, but our Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan is going to be the first Indigenous woman governor in the U.S. And I'm very excited about that because Governor Walz's office and her have been very supportive of our work. So I think to look at the few years from now, we're also hoping that we're going to be able to impact a lot of policy, because that is where the sweet spot is when we can impact policy. I hope our work transcends beyond just direct service, that we're able to have more impact around policy change, not just in Minnesota, but also in Washington, D.C. That's kind of where we're seeing our future going.
That's very exciting. I didn't know that about the future governor. That's very exciting. Asia, how about you? What do you see in your crystal ball?
For me, it's two-sided. On our team member side, I would really love for our culture to get to a point where we are very comfortable having those difficult conversations, and our team members, and I mean all of them, regardless of their position, feel like they truly belong in the organization. And even with the stressful work that we have to do and the stressful workload that they have, that they can honestly say that my organization supports me 100%. But in the same token, though, of course, we know we can be too empathetic as leaders sometimes, and that blurs lines. So now that I am connected to the Compassionate Leader Circle, I plan on doing a lot of work in connecting compassion to justice and where that meets. And hopefully we can, the Buckeye Ranch can be leaders in that, because I do think that there's something to be said about being too empathetic. We can understand where team members are, but you can still stay within compliance and federal guidelines, of course. But for some people, that can be very hard to do, right? If you feel horrible, you don't want to take somebody's, you know, livelihood because you may have to term them for something. So it's like, oh, well, let me give you one more chance. Well, sometimes that one more chance can be a risk issue for your agency. So figuring out what that line is for leaders. And for our families, really having our DEI department be more involved externally. So doing events for our community, having trainings offered to our families that we serve. That's a very, very big goal. I know it's that you said 10 years, right? So I have some time.
You have plenty of time. You're right.
Plenty of time. But yeah, that's definitely one of my major goals, is to offer some free training to our families in the DEI space. So that's EEO training, DEI specific, dealing with the children, but also helping them in their work atmospheres as well.
Beautiful. And you also teed me up for one of my favorite topics, is when we work with folks, we talk about sympathy, empathy, and compassion. Sympathy can be more about thoughts. Like, you may have sympathy for someone that you see on television, but you don't know, and you feel, you know. Empathy is about sharing feelings, which has its place, but it can actually create burnout for leaders, and especially healing leaders. If you're actually and you guys work with a lot of people that are in trauma, that are healing from things. So too much empathy can actually cause burnout, but compassion is thoughts, feelings, and action, right? So if you can get to the action, you can have those feelings move through your body, and it will actually energize leaders. So yeah, all three of those things are human and important, but I think especially healers tend to overuse empathy, and it creates burnout. So that's my little compassion soapbox for the day. Before we end, I asked you both to think about life lessons and leadership lessons that you could share with our listeners. So let's start with the life lesson. What life lesson would you like to share with our listeners today?
Your story, or what you feel like are your mistakes in your life, they don't determine who you really are or just how far you can go in life. It's all about turning it around to think about yourself. Like Comfort said earlier, you're not a victim, you're a survivor. And in this world that we live in, we all know it's very complicated and stressful and sometimes depressing. But if you can get up and continue to do it day in and day out, you are a survivor, which means you are strong enough to continue on. So don't use your story as something that's negative or something to be ashamed of, because it's not. It's what develops us into the great people that we are.
It's the foundation for something new. Well right. said. Thank you. Comfort, your life lesson.
So my life lesson are going to come from the four books that I've authored. The first book is called Facing the Giants. The life lesson from that has been around, eventually, as my sister Asia also said, you must face the giants. You have to confront those uncomfortable, those really hard conversations and name them. If you don't name them, it's hard to face them. Face your giants, no matter how long it takes. The second book is called A Sacred Promise. You have to give yourself that sacred promise and keep your heart in that sacred place where nobody else can touch it or violate it. And this is a lesson for survivors, right? Once you name the giants, create boundaries, make the sacred promise to yourself. And the third book is called Women Changing the World. And I think for me, that lesson, quelled in that lesson, is that you have the power to change your world and then even the world around you. I like to say, no one is really coming to your rescue. You are your rescue. And the solutions you seek outside of yourself, they are all inside if you tap into your ancestral wisdom. And then the last book, A Gift in Pain. There's always gifts in your pain. There's always lessons in your pain if you sit long enough to find what those gifts are and how you perceive those painful moments and how you churn them for your purpose. It definitely impacts the outcome at the end. The one painful moment should not be the final destiny for you. So multiple lessons, but I wanted to just make it a one big book. So I took a little more time.
Well, congratulations on writing four books. And of course, we want all your lessons. So, and Comfort, tell us a leadership lesson you'd like to share with us.
For one to be a successful leader, I just wrote this article. I haven't published it yet on my LinkedIn. You must get rid of a few things. And I'll share a few. Get rid of the need to compete with the other. There's no competition. You only compete with yourself. Get rid of procrastination. Procrastination is a seed of trauma. There's something that you get a reward when you procrastinate. Also, always show up in a place of service. Give, give, give without expecting anything in anything back. You will always get back sevenfold. Always assess when you no longer have the capacity and communicate those to your colleagues. Ask for what you need so you can prevent burnout, because you're no good when you're burned out. It's really to your clients. Those are my lessons, yeah.
Lovely, thank you. Asia?
I would say a tip would be to give yourself grace. I think sometimes, depending on your position, there's decisions that have to be made that are not always going to be in favorites of everybody. But if you've taken that time, like we've talked about in this past hour, to center yourself, have time with yourself, to really process your thoughts and process through situations, then have faith in yourself that you're making the right decision. And that it's okay. You're not always going to get it right. That's why we continue to learn and grow. But also understanding that you too have had trauma. Sometimes you have to share with your team members so that they understand that I'm not talking to a robot, right? My leader does have feelings. She's been through some things too. Not saying that we have to share out everything that's personal about us, but sometimes sharing something that is truly, I want to say, not sacred, but close to your heart, and something that you wouldn't just openly share, can really bring connections to you and your team members.
So before we end our time together, I'd like you to share with our listeners how we can support your beautiful work. How might we donate to you? How can we learn more? So Asia, tell us about how we can learn more and maybe support the work at Buckeye Ranch.
Of course. So we have an external webpage, thebuckeyeranch.com. It could be .org. I think it's probably .org. But we have our external webpage, which is beautiful. On that webpage, it does have a link where you can get involved. It does tell you about all of our different programs and the work that we do. Also, a lot of times I'm doing a lot of things for our team members and for our DI council, who actually helps me do a lot of my work. So if you ever want to get involved with doing that, you can always just follow me on LinkedIn and shoot me a message. It is my name, Asia A. Pope. I know Asia spelled crazy ways nowadays. It's just ASIA, like the continent, nothing traumatic. But that's the perfect way to get involved and get connected is either with me through LinkedIn, or you can go out to thebookiranch.org.
Excellent. Comfort?
Well, for organization, I'll spell out the name. It is www.pumulani, and it's PHUMULANI.org. That's our website. There's a donate button there. We're also actively looking for volunteers for our upcoming event in October. We're always, always looking for our volunteers and also for any advisory board members at this moment. We're currently recruiting. So if you go to our website, you will find all that information.
And you can learn more about Comfort in Asia at CompassionateLeaderCircle.com. If you click on the CLC Awards, their information, their bios, and links to their beautiful organizations are right there. Thank you, ladies. It was a joy to be with you. I look forward to continuing this conversation, and I hope you have a beautiful day.
Thank you.
Thank
nice
you.
To meet you, Mrs. Asia. Yeah, take care.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeaderCircle.com.